This is Mike Roth. Welcome to the Open Forum in the Villages podcast. In this show, we're going to talk to leaders in the community, leaders of clubs, and interesting folks who live here in the Villages to give perspective of what's happening here in the Villages and information that I think all villagers should have. We hope to add a new episode most Fridays at 9 o'clock. We are making a change soon. All of our shows will be distributed by a single podcast syndicator, Buzzsprout, both the old shows and the new show. We are also changing our subscription plans. Now, you will be a supporter by simply making a subscription, subscribing via Buzzsprout. You can make a contribution of any amount that you'd like. We'd suggest $3 a month. If that's too much for your budget, you can pay less, or if you're really enjoying what we're doing and want to see us continue, you can pay more. This is going to be a subscriber-supported podcast. We are making this conversion to make it easier for everybody. And all of the subscriber-only episodes that were available on Apple Podcasts will now be converted to the Buzzsprout channel, and everyone can go ahead and listen to those. This is Mike Roth and Ed Williams on this week's Open Forum in the Villages. Thanks for joining me, Ed.
Pleasure to be here, Mike.
Ed, I always like to put a little joke into the show for my grandson, Evan. Ed, do you know how bees brush their hair?
No, Mike. How do bees brush their hair?
They use honeycombs.
Oh, but of course. The name of a song, Honeycomb.
Okay, well, let's not sing. No one wants to hear me singing.
I know. I don't like to hear my own self singing.
Okay. So, Ed, why don't you fill in our audience of what you did in your work career before you came to the Villages?
Oh, my work career. Wow. A variable. Although most of the time I spent it in broadcast engineering in Columbus, Ohio, where I grew up, then Ohio University, where I worked as a broadcast engineer for about 12 years, and also PBS, which I went to after my stint in Athens, Ohio at Ohio University. I joined PBS in Washington, D.C., and we did a lot of fascinating things there. We were involved in stereo sound for television, digital audio, satellite distribution, captions for the deaf, advanced television systems. Later on, we got into high definition, lots of demonstrations. We took a truck all over the country to do demonstrations for educational institutions and for other public television stations. I wore myself out with that. Between that and in editing the NAB Engineering Handbook, I spent a few years with the National Association of Broadcasters and did a lot of fun things there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I retired in 2005, and in 2007, I moved to the Villages.
Okay. And here in the Villages, you run the Old Time Radio Club.
Yes, I do.
Now, did you start that club, or did you inherit it?
I inherited it from a fellow, Jim Rentz, who was playing back tapes of old radio shows to a very small group in the Bacall Recreation Center.
Okay.
And he got tired of doing that, and he was also not in very good health, and he asked if I would continue the operation, and I did. And then we evolved into doing more than that. Jim Rentz had always wanted to have the club with the name Drama in it, the Old Time Radio Drama Club, meaning he wanted performance. And so I was looking around, and I found a woman who would like to do that kind of thing. And she got very involved with it, and we produced the Old Time Radio Players. And from that, we do performances not only for our own club meetings on the first Thursdays of each month at Savannah Center, but also for other social clubs as well as entertainment for them.
Okay, and when did you start doing that, Ed?
Oh,
when did you take over?
Yes, it was about 2010, I think. Yes.
Okay, so you've been doing it for 12 years.
Yes, yes.
Yes, I've seen your productions several times, and I absolutely loved what you did for the War of the Worlds.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that was a very special performance that we did on October 30th.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you made a recording of that.
We did. Yes.
Are you making that available over the web to people?
I could do that. Yes.
That might be a good thing to do.
All right.
We'll see how many villagers call the news stations that the Martians are coming. Ed, in working with your club, how many different performers do you have that you use during a radio, I'm going to use the word broadcast, but it's not broadcast, it's just done in the room?
Well, I have a cadre of about 18 to 20 people that I can call on to do various parts. A typical old-time radio show may involve anywhere from 6 to 10 people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The scripts for the old-time radio shows, where do you get those from?
Generally online, simply scripts. A couple of other listings that are available online for free scripts.
Oh, free scripts. So, yes. So these are not copyrighted, like Bibber, McGee, and Molly?
In general, the copyright is either run out or is just available. And since we don't charge admission for our performances, other than a donation to cover the cost of the snacks and things like that, we don't really worry about it too much.
Okay, I could understand that. Why don't you give our listeners who have not been to the Old Time Radio Club an idea of what happens at your meeting and what this sequence of events are?
The Old Time Radio Club is actually a program. It's a radio program. We start off, first of all, with an announcer to warm up the audience a little bit, find out some information that we need to know about the nature of the audience. And then, at a particular time, he announces that the show is about to begin, and we're going to start. The Village's Old Time Radio Club is on the air from the fabulous Savannah Recreation Center. And we have music. And then an announcer comes up and introduces what's going on, and then I'm introduced, and then I introduce the old-time radio players. We do a performance of an old-time classic radio show. After that, we have a broadcast trivia game, and after that, we have a musical quiz, and then that generally brings us to a conclusion, and we have a wrap-up at the end of it, and closing music. So it sounds as though it were a real radio show. It runs about an hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah. The last time I was there, which is about a month ago, what I really liked was the on-the-air signs.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do that. We also have applause signs to prompt the audience when necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were the guy running those signs?
My sound and music guy, Steve Shulman, runs the on-air sign. I do the applause signs. After all, I'm the director, so I generally know where it's supposed to have applause.
Okay. So you pick a script, and I assume you send copies via email to the players that you want to do them. Do they have to do auditions?
I don't really use auditions per se. I find out of the ability of individual actors, trying them out, first of all, as an announcer, because that's a nondescript, and ask them to emote a little bit, to demonstrate their flexibility. Then I will try them out in a fairly routine actor's part within the show. And then as they discover either themselves or I'm able to urge them on to develop themselves, why, I'll move them up into different characters. And I've had a couple of people who have no background in training in acting at all, who've done really very well as becoming characters. That is, they might be gruff, or they might be suave, or they might be very disdainful. Radio, of course, is a audio only medium. You can't see what the players are doing. So you can't see them waving their arms or in elaborate costumes. As a result, it's strictly the sound that they make that creates the character that becomes a part of the old time radio show.
Mm-hmm. And if someone wanted to participate, how many rehearsals do you do for one of these radio shows?
We generally spend one day in advance, about 2 hours, and do two complete run-throughs. Now, it's not polished as it might want to, but I don't want to overburden the actors either, because we do this once a month, and sometimes during a month we have a performance for another social club. So as a result, I don't have them appear at rehearsal after rehearsal after rehearsal. Mm-hmm. We get what we get. Sometimes there's little fluffs made here and there. The audience seems to appreciate it because they can see what's going on up on the stage and not hear it as a lot of dead air, if you will.
Right.
So
right.
As a result, it works out very well. And sometimes the fluffs get as much laughs, as the program itself does.
Mm-hmm. So when you do a private club performance, do you use the same scripts that you have used in the public shows?
Yes. For the regular club meetings, we do it one show, one radio classic program performance. And then we've got other features going on. When we do a social club, we usually do two old-time radio classic shows, usually a comedy and sometimes a mystery or a detective story. And for that, we do, and those have been done in the past at a club meeting. So there's already some knowledge of it. Now, I can't always get the same actors for every show and for every event. So we always have a rehearsal the day before.
Okay.
And we run through it usually twice. We then go to that particular performance, that venue. Sometimes it's a dinner meeting. Sometimes it's something going on in the afternoon. And we take about an hour to set up because I need to put up my microphones and sound equipment, a couple of signs, and the on-air sign, of course. And then the actors come in. They go on stage. They're announced formally. We do the performance, and they are closed out formally, and we come to an end. And usually is very successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen several of the performances that I thought were very successful. The first one I saw, it goes back probably 5 years when I first got to the Villagers. They were playing back old tapes of radio shows. And that wasn't anywhere near as good as the ones I've seen lately where you're using live actors performing an old script.
Yes.
Okay. Can you give our audience that are listening to this podcast an idea of the radio shows that you've used scripts from?
Well, Fibber, McGee, and Molly, of course, comes to mind because there are so many scripts available, and they're good, fairly good scripts. They're funny. They are sometimes silly. They've got interesting characters in them, like Mayor Latrivia and the old-timer, people like that, Mrs. Carstairs. And for that, I get pretty good performances from some of the actors on that.
Mm-hmm.
Others involve Richard Diamond, private detective, Candy Matson, private detective, other comedy shows might include My Favorite Husband.
Do you ever try some of the Abbott and Costello shows?
We only have one Abbott and Costello routine, of course, and that's the famous Who's On First. And we often do that at other events for other social clubs. We don't tell them about it in advance. We hold it until the end.
Yeah.
And now I've given it away, the clues.
Well, you know, at improv, we spent probably 3 months trying to perfect Who's On First as a routine. And then we came to the end of the snowbird season, and one of my cast members disappeared for the summer, and the other one went home frustrated that we couldn't put it on before an audience. And so what he did is his name is Cliff Rieger, he learned both parts, became a video producer, bought two different costumes, taped himself twice, and he did both parts of the Who's On First in the old-time baseball uniform. So he was very funny. And then he never came back to improv.
That's because we soaked him up into old-time radio.
Oh, do you
he's done old-time, he's done Who's On First for our group
as
well.
He was excellent.
Yes, he was. He actually memorized the script.
Yes, well, he knew both parts, you know.
And that's the neat thing about old-time radio is you don't have to memorize all the parts. You've got a script that you can hold before you and use that. And the actors like that feature because it gives them more flexibility. They don't have to spend as much time in advance preparing for the show.
Right. That's a problem. So we have another club we started called Boomer. It was originally called Boomer Humor on Friday night, second and fourth Friday nights at Bacall. And there we do purely scripted or stand-up routine. John Case is running that, and John's doing a great job. He actually wrote a couple of scripts, and we've gotten permission to do some other scripts from the outside. We have a couple of stand-ups. So that's a very different kind of experience.
Yes. Well, one of the things about old-time radio, of course, is the music and sound effects.
Oh, those are big, yes.
Oh, yes. And so I've got Stephen Shulman, who does that for me. He puts together a list of the effects. I do some editing. He finds most of the effects on the internet, or we actually create some at various times. We rarely do them live because of the difficulties of logistics, of moving objects around, miking them closely enough, having somebody to actually activate those things. So they're all on recordings, and the same thing for the music.
Well, in this show, our audience has already heard a rim shot,
yes,
which is placed into the show in post-production, because I don't want to have a drum and a cymbal in here.
We use gunshots, rarely rim shots, transition music between various parts, lots of doors opening and closing and telephones ringing, cars coming to a halt and screeching off in some of the detective shows, lots of things like that. And the audience likes to hear that. Some will close their eyes so that they can visualize what's going on rather than seeing what's happening because you can't see the cars that's on recordings. But it works very well, and the actors cue themselves up to those things as well and react to the sound effects as appropriate.
Do you have to tell the audience to turn on their hearing aids and turn them up when you begin your show?
No, I don't do that. We do ask them to silence their cell phones, of course, and also to not use their cell phones to look up the broadcast trivia answers.
Oh, yes. The broadcast trivia sounds simple. And last time I was at your show, my table actually won. It wasn't my fault that we won. I didn't know very many of them at all, but we had two people at the table that knew a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite surprising. Whoever comes up with those questions comes up with some real tough ones as far as I was concerned.
Well, I've had different trivia masters along the way of the years of the show being available. Larry Rodkin, who's a good improv actor.
And he's been on the show.
Yes, and he's been doing the trivia for the past year or so.
Yeah, he likes to come up with the hard ones.
Yes, and he likes to elaborate about them as well, as an improv actor would like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he has a lot of fun with it.
With both the questions and the audience as well.
Yes, yes. In the improv shows that we put on, we send Larry out into the audience about 10 or 15 minutes before curtain time to make sure that we have our volunteers that are going to participate in the show all lined up. They know when they're supposed to come up, get next to the stairs before we call them onto the stage. We've discovered that if we attempt to select them during the show, it turns a 3.5 minute scene into a 7 minute scene.
Oh, yes, with lots of awkward moments.
Well, not terribly awkward, but it's terribly time consuming.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Because you're moving four people up to the stage, and we're sitting in the middle of the back of the room, and you never know how long it's going to take.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we align our actors up on the stage in chairs, ready to get up before the four different microphones that we have, two of which are replicas of old-time radio microphones, the RCA 44BX that I had made by a modeler here in the Villages.
Really?
Yes.
You had it made?
Yes.
And I installed, in the Villages?
Yeah. And I installed a ribbon microphone inside each one, as the original microphone was.
Mm-hmm.
And it works very well. It looks good on stage. And they also sound pretty good.
Yeah. Are they the 48-volt phantom-powered microphones?
No, they are not. They are a ribbon microphone, so they are self-powered. A little bit low in level, but satisfactory.
Okay. Yeah. Right now, we're using a 48-volt microphone.
Yeah. Condenser.
Condenser microphone, yes. And the way the prices have come down on these microphones is just crazy. I couldn't believe how good the sound was, but that's another story altogether.
Yes. Well, and we're in a good studio here with properly set up acoustic equipment and microphone equipment and good headphones and a good system for doing the editing as well as the recording.
Good. So here in the Villages, what do you do for fun?
Oh, I know so many opportunities.
I know that the old-time radio club you're doing for fun.
Yes. I like to kayak. I've got my own. A friend and I like to go to different places around Florida. She's very active in the swim club and in other physical activities. And as a result, that works well for us. We've also traveled to many different places around the United States, both on our own as well as through the Rhodes Scholar tours.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been all over Florida, much of the southeast, up into the mountains in the west, and up into Maine. We're going back to Maine again. And we're going to Alaska this year.
Okay. So the kayaking that you do in your own kayak, is that a two-person kayak or a one-person kayak?
One person. We each have our own kayaks, and mm-hmm. we haul them to various rivers and lakes. And we also have been doing some RVing. My Jeep will haul around a reasonable-sized RV. So we rent an RV,
mm-hmm.
And we rent a location at a state park, and we go and stay there for several days.
What does it
sometimes
cost to rent
some
it?
Other people.
I've never looked into this, but round numbers, what does it cost to rent an RV?
Oh, anywhere from about $100 to $250 a day, depending upon the size and amenities.
Okay, so that's not too bad.
Not at all.
$200 a day?
If that's the equivalent of a decent hotel room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then
maybe a little bit more than a Hampton Inn.
Yes.
That gives you a lot different flexibility.
Yes, and much more fun because you're in a state park. You've usually got water and hiking available all around, so it's a lot more fun in that respect.
Okay. In the past, have you attended very many organ recitals?
I have. The Tampa Theater in Tampa has a magnificent pipe organ, and about once a year, they run a silent movie, and they bring in an expert on the organ, and they play the organ as the accompaniment to the silent movie, which
That's
is
it.
Back in the 20s. And the wonderful Phantom of the Opera, and The Captain, and a wonderful Charlie Chaplin things, fantastic shows, and the music makes such a difference.
Hmm. And when is the next organ concert in Tampa coming up? Do you happen to know?
I don't happen to know right now, no.
But I guess people can look up what theater is it in?
The Tampa Theater.
The Tampa mm-hmm. Theater? Okay. Since you came to the Villages, how much traveling have you done?
Well, initially, when my wife was still with us. She passed in 2011. We did a few cruises to the Caribbean, to Alaska, and to Scandinavia. Subsequently, Karen and I have only done one cruise down in the Caribbean, which is my favorite location to do that. But beyond that, we've gotten out west, and we've gotten up northeast, and we're going to Alaska. going back to Maine.
Where do you go when you go to Maine?
Oh, up in the Bar Harbor area, but not at Bar Harbor per se, but nearby in the Acadia National Park.
Right, right. I have a friend who lives right on the outskirts of the Arcadia Park, the house right on the water.
Mm. We've also been down to Costa Rica, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful country, well-managed, and we've been down to the Galapagos Islands off the coast of Ecuador.
My daughter went there. When I listened to her talk about it, it was kind of roughing it.
Not at all. We were in a yacht with 16 cabins, and spacious, excellent food, fantastic guides that we had who are local people and knew everything there. Also, Ecuador manages the Galapagos Islands very carefully. They only allow so many people there a day. You're not allowed to stay on the islands at all. You have to be on board your ship or back in a small town. You're not allowed to touch or do anything to the animals that are there. And as a result, great photo ops because the animals are not afraid of you. So they're just walking around next to you as though you were just one of them. Okay. It's quite a remarkable experience. I would recommend it to anybody to take that tour.
So where did you leave from to land at the Galapagos Islands?
Well, we left from Orlando, went down to Quito, Ecuador, which is at 9,000 feet, and you're huffing and puffing a little bit, and then to Guayaquil we stayed over in Quito. Guayaquil is the next jumping-off place for a small aircraft to go out to the Galapagos Islands because they can't accommodate the big jets.
Okay. So that was on the coast.
Yes.
And then you take the yacht from the coast to the Galapagos.
No. We take the aircraft from the Guayaquil to Galapagos, and then we get on our boat there because it's 600 miles out at sea.
Oh.
It'd take you a week.
So how many days were you actually on the island, the Galapagos?
10 or 11 days.
So you went back and forth to the yacht 10 or 11 days?
We were on the yacht 10 days, and we explored multiple islands. We had an opportunity to do some snorkeling, swimming with all the fish and the seals and the turtles. It's really quite amazing. We saw the blue-footed booby, got lots mm-hmm. of photographs of him, as well as lots of turtles and tortoises. The island also has a number of research facilities that are maintained, some by international organizations, some by local organizations, to do studies, to do counts, to keep track of things. And it's a pretty well-run operation.
So when you booked the trip to the Galapagos, did you book it yourself or did you use a travel agent?
Through a Road Scholar.
R-O-A-D
Scholar, like the Road Scholar study organization, but this is a commercial
travel agency.
Oh. And they go all over the world. It's remarkable, and they have experts for conducting the tours, and you're never bored. They always have things going on.
Good. So why don't you tell our audience what the regular schedule is for the Old Time Radio Club?
The Old Time Radio Club meets the first Thursdays of each month, usually in Savannah Recreation Center. There are variations. Once in a while, Savannah will kick us out for some special event that they're holding that uses our room. But we then go to another recreation center.
What time does it meet?
7 p.m.
Oh, so a nice, convenient 7 p.m. start time.
Yes.
And your programs run about 2 hours?
Generally, a little less than that. We put on an old-time radio show. We do the trivia. We do the music quiz. And all of that takes about an hour and a half.
Okay. And do people need to make reservations or they just show up?
Just show up. Mm-hmm. Pay the $2 donation for the printing and of the agendas and the snacks, which are plentiful. Mm-hmm. Lots of popcorns and pretzels and good sodas, things like that. Or you can bring your own if you wish.
Okay. Ed, is there anything else you want to add?
I'm having a great time here in the Villages. I think it's a remarkable community. It is well managed. It was well engineered to begin with. And from an engineering perspective, which I have, I can appreciate that. I've thoroughly enjoyed the time that I've had here, and I'm hoping to do a few more years of it beyond my age of 83 right now. Maybe I can keep it going for a few more years.
Good. I certainly hope you can. I know I've enjoyed the performances at the Old Time Radio Club.
Thank you.
And Ed, if someone wants to participate as a performer in the Old Time Radio Club, how should they get a hold of you?
Well, the best way probably is by the Old Time Radio website, such as it's the villagesoldtimeradio.club, or you can reach me by email.
Did you mean .com?
No, .club.
Oh, .club.
Yes.
Okay, so you got a good
URL. Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Or my email address, which is eawilliams@prodigy.net.
Great. Ed, thanks for being with us.
Been a pleasure, Mike.
Thank you again.
We are making a change soon. All of our shows will be distributed by a single podcast syndicator, Buzzsprout, both the old shows and the new show. We are also changing our subscription plans. Now you will be a supporter by simply making a subscription, subscribing via Buzzsprout. You can make a contribution of any amount that you'd like. We'd suggest $3 a month. If that's too much for your budget, you can pay less, or if you're really enjoying what we're doing and want to see us continue, you can pay more. This is going to be a subscriber-supported podcast. We are making this conversion to make it easier for everybody. And all of the subscriber-only episodes that were available on Apple Podcasts will now be converted to the Buzzsprout channel, and everyone can go ahead and listen to those.
Thanks for being with us today, Bill.
Well, thank you, Mike. I enjoyed it.
Good.
Remember, our next episode will air live Friday at 9 a.m., or should I say pre-recorded, but that's when it'll be released on our regular subscriptions. Bonus subscribers can get early access to episodes. Should you want to become a sponsor of the show, contact me at mikeroth@rothvoice.com. If you know someone that you think should be on the show, send me an email at mike@rothvoice.com. I want to thank everyone for listening to the show. The content of the show is copyright by Roth Voice 2023, all rights reserved.